across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is
The
Stephen Nolan Show!
The Programme for Government. A key milestone is what some of your political leaders are telling you. So key, some of the details in it. But the Health Minister was saying, well, he only found out about some of the detail in it at the end of last week, and he still doesn't know whether he's getting money that this document is suggesting could, you know, start to reduce waiting lists. That's waiting lists for you and your family. Actually, elective care, that means if you've got pain in your hip or you're desperate for an operation and you're sitting on a waiting list. And the Health Minister, astonishing, anywhere else, astonishing, that he is saying today he's having to write to other ministers to find out if he's actually getting the money that's in this document or not. Question for Mike Nesbitt, as is spelled out in the programme, is why did he sign off on it if he didn't know the answer to that question? Why did he sign off on this document? Anyway, all discussed on this programme this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Does it get any more important than health in this country? It'll affect every one of you at some time in your lives listening to this programme. It'll affect the people you love as to whether they're going to die with dignity, whether they're going to sit with a tumour in their body and actually have it treated within the NHS. If you get dementia, if you get Alzheimer's in later life, if you start to really need the health service in later life. So what are you going to do? Are you going to be stuck in a hospital where you cannot get the specialist care in a care home that you actually need? If your child is born and has a cancer, if your granny and granddad need a hip replacement, are they going to live those last few years in pain? Health isn't down at the bottom of our list of priorities, and every one of us know it. So when the programme for government was given out, how the hell do we have a situation in Northern Ireland where our health minister did not know about money that was allegedly being promised, dangled in front of him, dangled in front of the public? Just listen to our health minister speaking yesterday about the 135 million to reduce waiting lists and the 80 million a year to increase elective care capacity. Just listen to this.
I didn't know this was coming, and other ministers have made the point that in terms of a four-party coalition government, it wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge, shall we say.
Is that as good as it gets? He didn't know it was coming? Michelle O'Neill, Emma Littlepink-Elliott, the very top of our administration, should you hang your heads in shame that the health minister is saying he didn't know this was coming? How could he plan for this? And is it coming? Because you look at this document, and what does it actually say? With executive support, invest up to 135 million a year. So we're no further on than last year, are we? We're no further on if you're sitting in a waiting list, are we? Because it's with executive support. And guess what? The executive hasn't been able to give Nesbitt the money up to now. So what is actually in this programme for government that will make a difference? Let's hear more of what Mike Nesbitt said.
It is a dramatic and indeed very welcome turn of direction by the executive, because we have asked for money for waiting lists before and have those bids rejected. So to be clear, 80 million a year is what is required to stop the waiting list getting any bigger, and 135 million a year is what is required for 5 years in a row to reduce those waiting lists so that everybody's been seen in a timely manner. So I will be, for the avoidance of doubt, writing to the First Minister, Deputy First Minister and the Finance Minister just to clarify that that is what they are proposing to do, and to clarify also the timelines for that spend, because if that money's come in, the 135 and the 80, I need to start planning immediately. I didn't know this was coming, and other ministers have made the point that in terms of a four-party coalition government, that it wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge, shall we say, in the build-up to the publication of the final programme for government. But look, all I can say is, if that money is coming, it is going to be incredibly welcomed by those who have been waiting on really very, very long and unacceptable waiting lists for pain relief and for treatment.
Can you hear what he's doing there? So that's a minister banking down what's in this document. That's what he's doing. So he's saying, all right, I didn't know about this. Of course, he knew on Thursday because he signed it off. He's saying he didn't know before Thursday, right? But what he's then doing, because it's in this document, is he's banking it. He's saying, okay, you say you're going to give us this money. I'm banking it. Here's what I'll do. I'm just going to write to you for clarity. Have a listen more to the Health Minister.
If that money's coming, the 135 and the 80, I need to start planning immediately about getting that money out and getting people seen in a more timely manner.
Minister, how can you be shocked about this? This is an executive programme for government. Surely you knew that this was coming?
I didn't know this was coming, and other ministers have made the point that in terms of a four-party coalition government, that it wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge, shall we say, in the build-up to the publication of the final programme for government. But look, all I can say is, if that money is coming, it is going to be incredibly welcomed by those who have been waiting on really very, very long and unacceptable waiting lists for pain relief and for treatment.
What difference will it actually make to this waiting list situation?
Well, it will mean, if the £80 million will mean that the waiting lists will not get any longer, and the £135 million will start to eat into those people who have been waiting too long. But it will take a repeat of £135 million four more times, in our estimation, to bring those waiting lists down so that everybody is seen within the time limits that we've set.
Are you sure you're getting the money? Are you sure you'll get the money?
I will be writing to the First Deputy First Minister and Finance Minister because I just want certainty about the fact that this money is coming. Because if you read the narrative, it talks about working with executive colleagues. So there is a hint perhaps of best endeavours there, whereas I'm looking for a guarantee, because I'm going to be going out, not least the private sector, to spend some of that money. And they'll want guarantees, they'll want contracts. So we need certainty on all this spend.
Minister, at what point did you discover you were getting this £135 million? Well, the suggestion that you were getting up to £135 million?
Well, it's in this draft document that I got towards the end of last week. And now what I want to do is just get certainty that it is coming, or it is the intention, at least, of the Deputy First Minister to encourage the executive to bring it forward. One other point I would say, in the document it talks about £76 million for waiting lists being authorised for this year. That was authorised by me. That's out of the internal Department of Health budget. It's not additional money that's coming from finance at the request of the First and the Deputy First Minister.
It wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge. So that's not coming from a two-year-old. That's not talking about Ludo. That's talking about health. That they didn't sit down and consult with each other. So to the DUP this morning, to the Ulster Unionist Party, to the Alliance Party, to Sinn Féin, I take it this money's definitely coming, right? I take it you've all sat down and actually discussed this, right? Because there's absolutely no way you would dangle this money in front of heart patients and old people and children who have been affected by waiting lists in the NHS. You wouldn't do that to them, would you? But you see, the unanswered question here is, where's this money coming from? So if you've now teased it, despite the Health Minister saying he only found out at the end of last week about it. There's a question there for Nesbitt, by the way, the Minister. Why didn't he ask more questions before he signed it off? When he saw this draft at the end of last week, why didn't he say, hold on a minute, if this is in this document, sorry, you're definitely giving it, aren't you? Can we discuss this? Look what Andrew Muir did. He refused to sign off the document until he got further clarity. Or was it smart of Nesbitt? Minister Nesbitt, what he's done here is he's essentially said, OK, they've said this money's coming, here's what I'll do with it. But he's having to write now to the finance minister. He's having to write to them and say, what's going on here? And this is after our programme for government has been delivered. Anne Watt from the think tank Pivotal with us this morning. Good morning to you, Anne.
Good morning, Stephen.
You know, why would they do this with something as important as health?
Yes, when I saw this document yesterday, I immediately noticed the language that was used that you've already pointed out to your listeners. So the language on the target for 2027 is with executive support, invest up to 135 million a year to reduce waiting lists and a further 80 million a year to increase elective capacity. So it's those words with executive support
and up to.
Invest up to, yeah, are the things, you know. So if you were being really cynical, you know, investing £2 is up to 135 million, you know. So
it's what I pointed out yesterday, 100%.
Yeah, they've given themselves a way out here, but by putting in those numbers, which are numbers that the health minister has been using in recent times to say what's needed to address the waiting lists that have built up and to address the flow of new people onto the waiting list. He's been talking about those numbers of 135 million and 80 million. And so to put those in would suggest that that is what the executive plans to do, that they plan to actually spend that money. And it is, I would say, you know, it's very, misleading would be a kind way to put it, to use those numbers if that is not what they intend to do. So that's the first thing I'd say.
Well, surely they've got to intend to do this. They wouldn't. Well, they wouldn't do that with people sitting in pain on the health service, or would they? Sam McBride joining us from the Belfast Telegraph. Would they do this, Sam? Would they actually dangle it in front of the sick people without having worked out where the money's coming from?
Good morning, Stephen. I can't, I'm afraid, answer that question because I honestly don't know. But what I think is pretty clear here, as Anne says, is that there's a bit of a conjuring trick going on here. So there are three sets of figures in relation to health. There's 76 million that is being invested this year. As you heard Mike Nesbitt say there, that's something that's out of his budget already. It's not new money. There's nothing different about that. So that's being quite misleadingly presented, I think, as something highly significant. That's something that's just happening anyway, even if we never had a programme for government. Then the second figure is this £80 million a year, which does, to me, seem to be pretty firm and pretty significant because it says that that will be invested. There's no question over that. And what the Stormont Health Department says is that that will stop waiting lists getting any longer. So that is significant. We can't pretend otherwise. But then there's this highly misleading figure of 135 million. And as Anne says, it says up to 135 million pounds. That means that that figure is utterly meaningless. We can just forget about that figure. It means absolutely nothing. It could say up to 1 trillion. It could say up to the entire GDP of this island. I mean, it's utterly irrelevant. If you say up to as a politician, you're not being serious. This is not a commitment. It doesn't commit them to anything. A pound, 50p, they've met their target. So that to me screams that there's something going on here that's very, very odd and very, very questionable as to why that figure was put in there, if actually there is no commitment to it whatsoever.
Why would they do that to people? I'm coming back to that question. Like, do they think people are stupid? Are they trying to make them feel good on a Monday and then the reality when they go to their doctor that there isn't enough money, if they've got a tumour, if their child is sick, if their granny's lying in a hospital, can't get out? Like, is that what they're actually doing to people? Or is there a better spin in this?
Well, Stephen, I think very few people, and I'm not remotely being critical of anybody for not doing this because it's frankly a very boring document, will ever read this document. So they're not doing this because ordinary people are going to be pouring through this and wondering why there aren't figures there. What they are
Sorry,
doing
Sam,
here,
let me is, let me just cut across you. Mike Nesbitt's actually speaking at a press conference. Let's dip in. He's talking about this now.
About the timeline, because if we're getting it, we have to spend it. We absolutely have to spend it, and therefore we need urgently to plan how we do that. Because it's not just about money, it's about the buildings and the equipment, and above all, it's about the workforce who can deliver the change to the waiting lists. And that's going to need a bit of coordination.
And do you think that makes what's happening here today feel a little bit more possible?
Well, it's certainly given me a lift, and I would imagine the delegates who are here this morning will be feeling the lift as well. They'll want to know about the plan for spending that money, how exactly are we going to get the waiting list down, and of course that will play into the pressures that will be coming next winter. But I now call those winter pressures additional winter pressures
because the pressures on ED are 365.
This is obviously planning for the months ahead, but in terms of the winter pressures that we just had, are we still feeling the effects in our hospitals of that?
Well, things have calmed down to the extent where we have regular daily pressures on our health system, which manifest in ED.
So the pressures aren't about winter pressures there, Sam and Anne. But if you clock what was said there, he said if we're getting it, we have to spend it. So what Nesbitt's doing here is banking the money, knowing that it hasn't been signed off, knowing that it hasn't been agreed yet. Let's stay with this for just a second, and then we'll come back to Anne and Sam.
Minister, I understand that the Department of Finance is saying this morning that the money that was announced yesterday is not confirmed. You yourself have said that there needs to be clarity around it. Is on that basis what was announced yesterday worth the paper it was written on? And why did you sign up to a programme for government whenever you don't have those answers of whether that money will actually be made available?
Well, what I said yesterday was that on the face of it, it was really good news and represented a change of heart in terms of the executive office and the executive. But I do want to say to the Minister for Finance and to the First Minister and Deputy First Minister, show me the money. Because now that that's out in the public domain, that has raised expectations for people on the waiting list, for the professionals who are here at Le Mans thinking about next winter, for me, for everybody, and the worst thing that we could do is not deliver on that. So I will be writing urgently to the First and Deputy First Minister, to John O'Dowd in Finance. I'll be looking for meetings just to nail that down and have absolute surety about the money being there and when it's going to be available to be spent.
But should you not have had that surety before the programme for government was published?
I asked for that surety. We asked for that money before and those bids were not successful. But I'm not for walking away. I'm going to go in and do the best job I can with the money that's available to me, with the workforce that's available to me, with the resources that are available to me.
Minister, isn't it remarkable that you didn't know, considering years of talking about waiting lists, and particularly since you took up post, that you didn't know about this money? Isn't it remarkable? And what way is that to run a country, that you weren't told in advance that that money was going to be available so that you could start planning? And it is slightly negative news this morning that we're reporting that the Department of Finance have told BBC Radio Ulster that there's no guarantee that this money is available for waiting lists. So how do you go forward today?
Well, if you read the narrative within the programme for government, it is clear that this is to some extent aspirational. It talks about, with executive support, we will have up to 135 million, not we will have 135 million. I'm just going to work with what I've got, and I'm going to continue to argue for what I need. And I think because I've argued strongly about what I need, we've got to this point where there is up to 135 million plus the 80 million to make sure those waiting lists don't get any worse.
It's not fair on patients, is it? It's not fair on patients who are listening to all this. Maybe expectations raised yesterday and perhaps a bubble burst today.
Well, I don't think the bubble has burst, and I think if the bubble were to burst, it would be a terrible condemnation of the executive for raising expectations only to dash them. Because we're talking about people who are living in pain, maybe have been living in pain for years, and now they're suddenly being given hope for the first time in a long time that they may get some relief. So it would be worse than cruel to dash those hopes.
But that should have been sorted out before.
Who's actually involved in this engagement, and how important do you think that these next four will be?
Well, it's okay. The full range of stakeholders.
By the way, he's talking there about BBC Radio Ulster. It's the statement that we have here at the Nolan Show in front of us that she's referring to, and it says the following from the Department of Finance. They're not confirming the money, Anne and Sam. Just take that press conference out for me, please. Thank you. The health service is a priority for the executive, says the Department of Finance, with this being reflected as one of the nine pillars in the programme for government. And then these next couple of sentences is where the Department of Finance essentially say this isn't signed off. They say the following. The draft 2025-26 budget is currently out for consultation. Once this is complete, the executive will agree the final budget, including the final allocations for each individual department. That's government speak for. The executive have not agreed this. The executive, Sam, have not signed off this money, and it's still only out for consultation. Meanwhile, we have the health minister. You can see what he's doing, Sam. He's trying to bank it. He's saying, you've dangled this in front of people. Now, he's got a question to answer. Why did he sign this off if he knew it was being dangled in front of people without a guarantee?
Yes, Stephen. And going back to your last question as to why these figures were put in there, I think it was about getting him on board. I think that there was a view in the executive that they needed Nesbitt to sign up to this. And without something that seemed a bit more concrete, and part of this in terms of the 80 million is concrete, it seems, the other bit isn't, that they might not get him. And so I think that's what this was about. But you've got a situation here where it is, as he says, very aspirational. They want to do this. They'd like to do this. Well, everybody would like to do this. But how are they going to do it? Where are they going to get the money? And that's where this document doesn't give us the answers. It doesn't say they're going to jack up our rates. It doesn't say there's going to be new taxes. It doesn't say they're going to end the crazy situation where people in the poorest homes in Northern Ireland who own their own homes are subsidising people in multi-million pound mansions. I mean, none of that is spelled out here. So it's probably going to be, if history is a guide, going to the Treasury with a cap and saying, please give us some money. And that is not working very well right now for Stormont.
I wonder, Anne Watt, when the finance minister knew about this pledge, John O'Dowd. So when did John know about it? Because he signed this off as well. So if you've got the finance minister signing off this document, that's the Sinn Féin on board. If you've got the DUP who signed it up, then they must be on board. Obviously, Mike Nesbitt will be on board. The Alliance Party signed up to this document. So must they now deliver this money?
I think they will always be able to go back to the fact that the wording says with executive support, invest up to 135 billion. So they will fall back on that and they will say that was a general commitment, but we didn't pin down the actual number. And they will come back to that if the amount that can be invested is only 5 million or 10 million. And they'll come back and say, but we didn't commit to an actual amount of 135. I think the thing you've mentioned here that's really important is that the draft budget for next year, 25-26, the year starting in April, that's out for consultation at the minute. There's no
agreement
about that. Well, we don't know yet whether the money's there, because what we've got is allocations for departments as a whole, but we don't know how the departments are going to spend that money and what efficiencies or savings they might be making. So what we have here is a programme for government that says this is what we want to do, but it's not connected to the budget for next year. I mean, one thing that really shocked me when I read this was that it doesn't even have the budget numbers for next year in it, even though they're out for consultation at the minute. It talks about the budget for this year. So they should be connecting this, you know, to what they're going to spend. You should be saying, this is our policy aim, and this is how we're going to spend the money. At the minute, we've got two separate processes. But to go back to your question, did the finance minister know about this? All executive ministers knew about this from Thursday of last week when they signed it off together. So absolutely, the finance minister will have known about this. But what he will have done is he will have looked very carefully at those words, with the executive support, invest up to, and he will have said, okay, that doesn't commit me to 135 million. It commits me to some amount.
So why would John do that?
135 million.
So why would John do that? Why? Look, he's on the ground. He's been around politics a long time. Why would John O'Dowd, as our finance minister, you know, sign off on something that he knows when the public, and government wants the public to engage in documents, he knows the public will see that 135 million a year figure to reduce waiting lists. He knows the public will see that it's been dangled in front of them, that this may treat an additional 70,000 people. He knows the figure of a further 80 million a year to increase elective care is about people within many working class communities who cannot afford private health care, and that they could he have signed this off thinking, all right, well, we're saying 135 million here, but up to means it could be 2 million. We're saying with executive support, so therefore we might not do any of this. Like, would John O'Dowd actually sign off on something like this?
We don't know what happened in the background here, Stephen. So there'll be endless negotiations between civil servants and then between ministers. So we don't know what position the finance minister was taking. You know, traditionally, you expect finance ministers to be really careful about numbers and documents. So I'm surprised that there's such a clear headline number in here if it can't actually be delivered.
We'll pause there. Sam, you're going to stay with us. We're going to talk about water as well this morning. And Anne, 0303 80 55 55. You're calling us about this. In fact, let's squeeze a call in before we go to the news. Malachy, morning, Malachy.
Hi, Stephen.
Do you trust them that they will deliver this money, given what we've pointed out to you?
To be honest, Stephen, I don't even care whether they give the money or not, because I think it's a complete waste of time. What I find about the government is they're very good at one thing, and that is taking money off people, but they're not actually very good at using it for any use.
Well,
for example, the government knows that as people get older, they have more health problems. But you hear a lot of politicians coming on and saying, no, we need more money to fix all this. But you never hear any politicians coming on and saying, you know, the government is announcing a new incentive, a new health incentive, and it's going to start from childhood.
I'm sorry. They are certainly suggesting a new incentive here with new money. It's absolutely being suggested here with the little fine print of up to and with executive support. Sammy in Belfast. Morning, Sammy.
Hello, Stephen. How are you? I cannot understand why Mike Nesbitt is still an executive. We all knew what was happening. He knew what was happening. He didn't object when they did it. He's now trying to play politics with it now that they've done it. But I'll tell you why he's still there. Because he sticks it for another 2 years, he can retire, he's getting the salary, and he's away.
Well,
for 14 years, Gardner, Stephen.
Come on, he's entitled to retire when he wants to, isn't he?
Yes, of course he is. And there's a whole lot of them will retire because they've got their age. And they're probably sick of it. They fight with each other. They fight with the civil servants. They play politics with everything that they do. It's orange and green. It's flags. Nothing ever gets done. We don't have enough money. We're pouring money down the drain. We're wasting it left, right and centre. We won't bring in water rates. We won't do anything to help ourselves. Just give us more money. Give us more money. Give us more money. When's it going to end, Stephen? 14 years without a programme for government.
Well, they have 27
been... 27 years of wasted opportunity, and the election and 2027 council and assembly election is looming large in the horizon, and they will do diddly squat between now and the next election, push reset, and the whole pantomime starts again.
Well, this is what a programme for government is about. It's about you being able to test their priorities and what they are telling you. So a couple of questions this morning to every one of those ministers, every one of those political parties in Northern Ireland that put this in front of the public. Are you actually going to hide behind small print on a pledge to sick patients? Invest up to 135 million, a further 80 million a year. So the same finance minister that was part of signing that paragraph off, his department have written to us essentially saying this is only out for consultation, the draft budget, and the executive will agree the final draft budget, including the final allocations for each individual department. In other words, this document does not guarantee that money or anything even close to it. Let's pause there. 0303 80 55 55. Here comes the news. Well, it was a busy day at Stormont yesterday. We're going to look at the promises that were made or not made for our water infrastructure next. You think that's boring? Well, try buying a house. Your sons or daughters buying a house, and it'll affect actually house prices because it affects the building and the ability of developers to build in this country. You don't think water is important? Well, try setting up a business and finding new premises. And wanting to build the premises, build actual infrastructure in this country. You've got to plug into the water supply. So water is really important. Let's see what they have or have not promised within the programme for government. We'll look at that next. It was busy dead storming yesterday. Just a flavour now of our politicians' reactions to the programme for government in the Assembly chamber.
As an executive, we won't always agree on everything, but there are many things that we will agree on, and those are the things that we should focus on. We agreed that families need support to deal with the cost of childcare. We agreed that our teachers need support and our public sector workers need properly paid. We all agree that drugs destroy communities and the police need resources and resources to put the dealers out of business. We all can agree that it is that economic prosperity that is the game changer for every community.
More than 1,000 days since the election, nearly 400 days after the executive was formed, we have the first programme for government since 2011. I was in my 20s then, I'm in my 40s now, Madam Principal Deputy Speaker, to give you a sense of how long we've been waiting. This document contains aspirations we share, but it is far short of the kind of clear, targeted plan that the people of Northern Ireland deserve after so many years of failure. And it has to be said that in the First Minister's remarks, warm though they were, I didn't hear a single clear target.
People do not need political platitudes, they need results. They need to know when their lives will get better, not just how we plan to make them better. The legacy of this executive and assembly cannot be one of short-term aspiration. It must be one of long-term delivery. And that can only be achieved with multi-year budgets, stable and reliable government and a commitment to interdepartmental collaboration that delivers real value for money.
Ministers from Alliance should not have had to ask for a summary of consultation responses, equality and rural impact assessments, nor should those ministers have had to ask for the final version of the document on the eve the executive was due to meet to agree it. I don't wish to dwell on those challenges, but I do sincerely hope that those lessons will be learned and recognised and that we can commit today to move forward together.
But I have a message today, despite of some of what I have heard, and that is a message of hope. It is a message of ambition, and it is a message of seeking to do everything in our power to deliver for the people of Northern Ireland, right throughout Northern Ireland, on the things that matter most to them.
The flavour of yesterday. Sam McBride, let's talk about water now. I was spelling out earlier how important it is. I'm looking at page 10 of the programme for government. Improving our infrastructure, says Stormont, signed off by every minister, this will be vital to delivering our priorities. By investing in water and wastewater, roads and transport and sporting infrastructure, we will encourage business to invest, enable house building and support greater energy efficiency and affordability. So every minister signed off on this. Where's the detail, Sam, of what they're going to do with our disastrous water supply? And I say disastrous in terms of the ambition compared to what it can cope with.
Well, Stephen, if you go a bit further down in that document, there is about as close to a commitment as you get here. It says that the historic underfunding in our water and wastewater infrastructure has been a persistent challenge. We will continue to work to increase capacity.
Yeah, now, I saw that. Continue to work. Yeah. What's it mean?
Well, I mean, what it obviously means is just keep doing what they're doing. We will continue. I mean, if you are doing something radically different, you don't continue doing it. So there are no big ideas here. There's no radical change. This is just plodding along, doing what they've been doing. And what they've been doing has been disastrous. So they don't want to talk about water charges. Fine. Have they any other ideas? There was this idea of making big developers pay. That, I think, would ultimately be water charges by the back door. That would be passed on to new householders. But even that's not mentioned here. I mean, it's really questionable as to whether anything is going to change here. It almost seems like they're reversing out of what had been some sort of idea for change, hugely problematic, I think, but it was an idea. And here you've got a situation where actually there's no money, there's no commitment, there's no sign of how they would raise any money. And as you say, this impacts absolutely everything. If you go elsewhere in this document, you see that they say something quite concrete. They say, by the end of this mandate, we will have started work on at least 5,850 new build social homes. Now, that's really important. Most people would be very, very supportive of that. That's something we clearly need. There's a 60-year low in new house building in Northern Ireland right now. But if those houses are built, lots of them won't be able to be lived in because the water infrastructure isn't there. So this, I think, is the most important element of this document. Without water, without sewage, if you can't flush the toilet, if you can't turn on the tap, you can't live somewhere, you can't build a factory, you can't build a hospital, you can't do anything. And they haven't addressed it.
But they refer to it in this document, which is supposed to be a list of priorities for the people of this country. Like, again, did all of those ministers, Sam, who sat around a table, did they not say to each other, obviously, the public are going to bring this up and say, what concrete are we actually talking about doing here? Or is this a load of waffle?
That's why this, I think, is so significant. This is not some flippant press statement that's been rushed out by somebody down the line. This comes from the executive table. It comes from people right up to the top of the civil service. It has gone through incredible scrutiny within the system. Think about this. This document has taken over a year to write. I mean, they've pored over every word. Every word of this is carefully decided upon as to what it says. When you look at one of the other things that they say about water infrastructure, they say our public infrastructure has deteriorated. It needs to be properly maintained and a range of issues are preventing progress. Additional funding for wastewater, for example, will increase our ability to build houses, etc. So they're saying there will be more funding. How much? Will it be a pound? We've no idea. They don't want to say because they can't agree. It's a straightforward forward as that.
So is that, Anne, what they've taken a year to do? To take out any firm commitments, any firm promises? Is that what took them a year to do? To go through this and say, well, hold on a minute, you know, broaden that out, waffle that out?
I think if we can look at one positive here, Stephen, about this whole process, is it is forcing the executive to pin down what they're actually going to do. So if they hadn't published a programme for government, they could still be talking in very general, aspirational terms about how bad things are and how they want them to be better, but without actually telling us what specifically they are going to do about it. And so one thing this has helped to, I suppose, bottom out is what exactly they can do. And a lot of the challenge about the draft programme for government, and I talked to you about this and lots of other people were talking about it, was it was vague in places. And now they've pinned down what they can do. And unfortunately, due to the poor state of our public services and the very limited budgets, unfortunately what they can do is not a great deal. And so at least we're having that conversation. And as you've been discussing with Sam, at least we're clear about what they cannot achieve, actually, because they just don't have the funding to do it.
Sam, they say in this document, Michelle and Emma, Michelle O'Neill, Emma Little Pagelli, our First and Deputy First Minister, they say at the start of this document, we can continue to work together, speaking with one voice. A day after it's published, the Health Minister's talking about not knowing until the end of last week about a commitment to health, as we've discussed. In terms of water, what are they all speaking with one voice, basically saying they've no idea what they're going to do with water? Or what are they saying?
Well, look, Stephen, I think lots of people will be pretty understanding of the executive having different views. It's a very odd system of government. These are people who don't agree on very much. I think they'd be much wiser, frankly, not to pretend that they agree on this, not to pretend that they're going to be speaking with one voice when clearly they're not right now. They will not be in the near future. And something which your caller Maliki said earlier was that government is at least good at taking money off people. Stormont isn't even good at that. I mean, they have enormous powers. I actually don't quite agree with Anne there that there's not much they can do here. I think they could do extraordinary things. They'd be controversial. They would get people's backs up. There would be all sorts of issues with that. They could slash government spending in certain areas. They could increase taxation on us. They could bring in all sorts of laws. We saw some creative use of that previously when they brought in the tax on plastic bags. A very small sum, a few million pounds a year. It's not massive, but it showed what they could do when they thought creatively. Here was a problem. Plastic bags were all over the countryside. They did something that both solved that problem to a large extent, but also brought in money. They could do that in 100 areas, and there's no ambition to do that whatsoever. It's simply saying the Treasury didn't give us enough money. It's your fault. We're not going to do anything.
What happens here over the next 12 to 24 months, Sam? They talk about improving infrastructure will be vital to delivering their priorities. What happens if nothing changes with water?
I think we'll see further collapse in the system, that new houses can't be connected, new businesses can't be set up. It'll be a continued deterioration. I think one of the things we need to wake up to here in Northern Ireland is that in a lot of areas, whether it's the health service or the water infrastructure or a transport infrastructure, just doing what we've always done is not going to give us in any way adequate provision. We need to have radical change to what we've done in the past. We need to step up our planning and our ambition on loads of fronts, and especially water infrastructure, and I would say the health service,
Brian,
but arguably on productivity and economic performance as well.
Brian Pope is a chartered civil engineer with Karen McShane Limited. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning.
Well, what difficulties, or how easy is it? How easy has our government made it to develop and build and plug into our water infrastructure in Northern Ireland?
Not very well. There's been under investment over many decades, and there's no sense at all in this document that the executive is taking it seriously. Nothing on reform of the water industry. There's no plan, and there's no clear funding commitments. Not only is this a wastewater and house building crisis, but this is an economic crisis as well. For instance, NI Water have got £140 million capital gap. And this is the money that they would use to upgrade their wastewater treatment works and pumping stations. And that's year on year. So not only this year, next year and the year after. And we are all engineers and developers are all looking for the same easy solutions to tap into that existing system.
Well, did you all rush to open the programme for government and see what they'd done about this?
We absolutely did. And to be honest, we weren't expecting an awful lot from the draft. But it is, I mean, this is a lost opportunity. This is an urgent situation. We've talked about developer contributions, but NI Water have already said that that would only have a limited impact on that. So we really have got to have a look at reform. We've got to look at borrowing from NI Water because the system at the moment will not take any more. We've got half the connections at the moment that are being refused. We can't even build temporary plants on sites because the NIEA and NI Water can't agree on the adoption. So we're really in an absolutely dreadful situation.
And when you say dreadful situation, if you've got developers who have the money and the desire to build, and you've got a planning system that isn't able to say yes, do the developers move elsewhere, or what do they do?
Well, they already are. They're looking elsewhere already. And some architects that I know, refuse to work in Northern Ireland now. Which is making very. I mean, there's no legislation at the moment for developers to contribute to the big infrastructure upgrades, only for pipe work alone. So only half of them could possibly go forward. But the problem is that we're all looking for those same easy solutions. So developers at the moment can't even fund. And even if they could, we would have a post-code lottery because you would have developers maybe developing in the richer housing development areas, and then social housing would suffer. And housing associations as well can't afford the millions of pounds to upgrade the network. So really, we've really got to think fundamentally about this.
And what's your take on the programme for government with regards to this?
Well, I think there's a couple of quite bland statements. It doesn't really give us any way forward. It just really states what we know already, that we need more capacity, more funding is needed. But what we want is solutions. And we quite clearly, we need one of the big problems is that we don't actually know how much the average household is paying at the moment through their normal rates. In England, for instance, water rates are about £450 and they're set to rise about £500 a year. But we don't know. So how do we know if our industry is working efficiently or not if we don't even know how much we are paying? So if the executive could work that out and find out exactly how much people are paying at the moment, then we can see whether we actually need to pay more, which I suspect strongly is the case, or what we have to do in terms of reforming the water industry.
Sam, is that... Sam's had to go this morning. Shauna Quinn is with us today, lives in an unadopted housing development. Morning, Shauna.
Hey, Stephen.
Good morning. So these are developments which have been built but do not meet a standard which the agencies, the statutory agencies, deem acceptable. So tell us about what you've been left with.
Okay, so I live in an unadopted housing development. It's called Kildrum, and we are based in Galway, just outside Dungannon. So, yes, over the years, we have sewerage issues. At the minute, it's an absolute eyesore. When you're driving in and out of our development, it's a matter of trying to avoid large potholes, raised manholes due to work's not been finished. And the whole development just looks so run down, Stephen. Pavements, tarmac, and it's never been complete. It's just unfinished and it's unsightly. And we never, as homeowners, anticipated that this would be an issue 15 years later.
15 years?
Yeah, 15 years, yeah. Yeah. And it's still unadopted.
And why are they not fixing it?
Well, at the minute, the department have advised that they have told the developer if they fail to take action, the department would undertake the necessary remedial works and draw down the funds. However, Stephen, we're just left in complete limbo, and we as residents have put up with this for too long. And whilst I do welcome the Programme for Government's commitment in terms of more social, affordable and quality housing and to improve the quality across the whole housing system, there's absolutely nothing in this document to protect us existing and all future homeowners purchasing in developments. And there was statistics released at the end of last year that there are over 1,800 unadopted housing developments across the north. So we were very much of the belief that the government were going to develop new guidelines to deal with developers that have not fulfilled their responsibility. There's nothing in this document to indicate this.
Anne?
Yeah, I think there's very little specifically in this document about addressing this issue. It talks in aspirational terms. It defines the problem. It says how it's been a huge constraint on housing, private housing, and on business as well. But, you know, they haven't got the money at present, and they're not prepared to make the difficult, unpopular decisions that would be involved in changing the funding model. And so they've just left it sit and left it to go on as it is. But I suppose the warning that we're not hearing, or certainly not hearing from the executive, is that you can't just go on doing what you've always done here. You need to make a radical change, or else we're going to have a complete disaster in our water infrastructure. So continuing as we are is not a sensible policy at all. We need to be realistic about what the consequences of it will be.
And thank you very much indeed, Shauna. Thank you. Jason, morning, Jason.
Good morning, Stephen.
Brian Pope, thank you as well. Sorry, Brian, thank you very much. Go ahead, Jason.
Yes, Stephen. Well, considering the health minister didn't know that there was, he might have been getting $135 million, is the executive departments cooperating with each other? Now, the programme of government, doesn't guarantee anything at all. It's just they aspire to. Are they guarantee anything in it?
Thank you, Jason. Danny next in Portadown. Down. Morning, Danny.
Hello, Stephen.
Are you impressed?
No, I'm not. I've listened to this for a long time, and it baffles me why, when there's 5,000 houses are getting built, why it can't be a fee for water supply and sewers, like electricity, get a fee, tradesmen get a fee. So, for example, if they pay £1,000 fee for a water connection on all new developments, that's a lot of generation of money to go into it, because at the end of the day, it's a new phase of building around the country, which is taking on demand of the old structure. So why are they not charging contractors money to upgrade the water supply to the new developments?
Well, they acknowledge in the document that there's a problem. But there's no hard and fast decision as to what they're going to do to tackle it.
Yes, but exactly. But if they turn around and put in water rates, what's that there, £100, £150 a year, wherever it is, if every new development, every new house was charged £1,000 for a water connection, electricity is maybe more than that, £200 or £2,000 maybe for electricity connection. It would add and help the water infrastructure
okay.
of the conflict.
Danny, thank you very much. Northern Water have been in touch with us. They say funding for NI Water is managed by the Department for Infrastructure and the Northern Ireland Executive. This is overseen by the Independent Utility Regulator, they say, whose role is to protect consumer interests. The government, as the shareholder and owner of NI Water, is expected to fund services to the level set by the utility regulator. They say Northern Ireland's wastewater system is at capacity. Well, we know that due to historical underinvestment. Unfortunately, the current budget allocation is less than the levels the utility regulator determined were necessary to operate the company and for future investment projects. So look at that. That's something that we've known. That's spelled out yet again in black and white. Current budget, less than the levels the utility regulator determined were necessary to operate the company and for future investment projects. So what have we got in our programme for government? What have all those great minds and the special advisors and all of those politicians with decades of experience, what have they actually come up with to tackle this programme? What have they taken after a year to write down in this programme for government, which recognises their ability to sort our crucial problems out? Well, go to page 10 of the programme for government and you will find it. There's nothing concrete as to what they're going to do, just as there is nothing concrete decided, even discussed around health, with the health minister about Monday, about money. And we are in a situation this morning where we have a government minister standing at a press conference this morning saying he's having to write to the finance minister because he didn't really understand where this money's come from. And if the big word, if he's getting it, he needs to spend it urgently. And then picture in your mind someone lying in bed this morning with tumours throughout their bodies, or children brave enough and unlucky enough to have cancer in their bodies, recognising that they might have a chance of survival if only Stormont can get their act together. And then look what's in this document and tell me if it's good enough. Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. We're talking about the programme for government and what has been promised to you and what has been waffle. How much of it's waffle, how much of it's promise, how much of it's reasonable, that's for you to tell me this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. Marie in Moyle. Good morning, Marie.
In Moyle, yes.
Good morning.
I rang, if you want me to say, I'll try and say as few words as possible to make it clear. Listening to you this morning regarding the situation with the budget for the National Health Service, I'm stunned. I discovered yesterday that my husband had been probably about 3 weeks ago went for a check for his lungs. He has been told that he has been in contact with asbestos because he worked in the building trade for years in England, that he is a smoker and there is damage. But I rang, instructed by the doctor who I finally got a contact with. I couldn't get an interview. I couldn't get an appointment yesterday morning after sitting on the phone for a half an hour. They were gone. to speak to him in person. Now, my husband's hard at hearing, and I want to discuss it. Now, I got to say the doctor was polite. I'm going to try and get another appointment with him. But when I rang the Craigavon Trust, I thought I'd written it down on this form. I haven't. There's at least 3 years waiting list. My husband's 77. Asbestos is dangerous. You know, he's helped to build loads of places in England, in London. I'm devastated, you know. And to see that the health minister didn't know where the budget was coming from or that it wasn't signed off. I'm not following the whole thing. But the promises we hear on television is that there's money being pumped into the National Health Service. Where is it?
Well, the programme, you're saying you don't quite understand it, Marie, and I understand that. But let me spell it out to you. So what they've done, a programme for government is essentially the government sitting down and saying, these are our priorities.
And yes, so, I do understand that. Yes, sorry for stopping you, yeah.
It's a contract with the people to say, look, we've sat down, we've discussed this, and these are our priorities. And health, they say, is one of the main priorities that they have.
Yes.
And despite them claiming that they're all working with one voice, they actually write it down here. We can continue to work together, speaking with one voice, is what Emma Little-Pengele and Michelle O'Neill said, despite that.
But the health minister had to be informed about this.
Well, the health minister is saying he only found out about this money at the end of last week. And then he's, well, let's have a listen to what he said about not knowing.
I didn't know this was coming, and other ministers have made the point that in terms of a four-party coalition government, that it wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge, shall we say.
So that
this is a disgrace. You know, I've listened on and off. I don't get involved in politics or anything. You know, I and I'm not racist or anything. You know, everybody is an individual, you know. But people have, my husband's 77, he's worked all his life for his insurance. And he has to wait. He could be dead before he gets seen. This is, you know, I'm not the only one. Everybody, as you say, have health issues at this age. You know, but don't we deserve, and everybody deserve, the young and old. Maybe they should go be a private National Health Service, as in the UK. You know, but people, I went down to my doctor when I was told years ago that I had an immunity system with vitamin D. I had to go down. I didn't reach the criteria, right? I had paid my national insurance, even though I'm from the south. I've lived in the UK itself for years, back in Northern Ireland for 25 years. I was told, well, I got my prescriptions for blood pressure and cholesterol free. After how many years? I'm 72. After probably from my 20s at least, I have paid insurance.
Do you think?
And this is what we're getting.
With regards to what? No, it's okay. With regards to what they have promised you, that they're speaking with one voice, and now you find out the health minister only knew last week. Why did he sign off on something that he's still not sure he's getting?
I work in retail. I have done since I come home to support my family and rob Peter to pay Paul when I came home first because there was no work around. And I have worked in offices in London and Luton. If I signed off or did something like that in the private sector, I would be sacked. Right?
I want to read this paragraph to you. You say your husband's 77. You desperately need the health service to deliver for him.
He wants to know exactly, you know, what is wrong with a consultant to see him, to tell him exactly what's wrong, and not a doctor to ring me up. Okay, he tried to contact him initially. I had to ring down and he did contact. But why are elderly people
waiting, and it happened to me previously.
Well, look,
rather than being contacted and spoken to directly.
I want to read this.
Sorry, diversifying.
That's okay. It's okay. I want to read this paragraph to you, and you tell me if Stormont is delivering for you, is treating you with respect. Now, remember that the money, when you clear the noise out of this, the money has not been signed off. The money has not been agreed. But here's what Stormont are telling you in what they describe as their programme for government. A glossy brochure with Michelle and Emma Little-Pengelly. Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little-Pengelly in the front
sure
of it.
It is, yes.
So let me read this to you. And you tell me if this feels to you like there's money going definitely to the health service. Here's what it says. Our target for 2027, with executive support, invests up to $135 million a year to reduce waiting lists by treating an additional 70,000 patients and a further $80 million a year to increase elective care capacity through expansion of elective care centres and mega clinics to remove the demand capacity gap that causes waiting lists to grow.
Well, I knew about that 70,000. I'd heard it on the radio, and I thought this
is not definite.
This is
months
ago.
It's not definite.
But no, they're not doing it. You asked me a question. Are they providing a service for me? Is that what you want to know, or for us, or for anybody in Northern Ireland? No, they're not. They're not living up to what they promised. Hello?
No, I think you'd be very powerful this morning, Marie. Thank you very much.
And can I also say,
yes.
Sorry for stopping you, as regards the water, I listened to that as well. Why aren't, there was very good points made previously with your talkers. Why are they not charging people? I know it would be another bill, but why aren't they charging, I can't remember what it was in England I had to pay 25 years ago. Why aren't they charging people in Northern Ireland to actually improve their infrastructure and improve their actually water? We all need water to live. Why aren't they actually passing a bill so that there is a charge?
Marie, thank you very much. Good morning. Our health correspondent, Marie-Louise Connolly, with us today. Marie-Louise, good morning to you.
Morning.
Good morning. We heard the health minister in that press conference that you were asking questions at with some of your colleagues try to explain how he has signed off a programme for government with an amount of money that he didn't know about and he's having to seek further clarity about.
Yeah, well, Stephen, imagine the backdrop. A conference at Le Mans Hotel with the great and the good of the health service there. There's about 130 delegates, Royal College of Nursing, Royal College of Emergency Medicine, cancer charities, they're all there in the audience. And among them is Northern Ireland's new interim permanent health secretary, Mike Farrer. And against this backdrop, there is news that the money that we heard that was coming yesterday to tackle waiting lists, that it's not definite. And everyone that I spoke to this morning said it was just embarrassing. It was shocking. You know, what way is this to run a country when the health minister didn't know what funding was coming to tackle what is one of Northern Ireland's most publicised problems, the hospital waiting lists, and still, despite a year of getting this programme for government together, there is still a lack of clarity around it. And people who are on waiting lists, and perhaps expectations were lifted yesterday, that bubble has burst this morning. And I put that to the health minister, and he said not at all, that the bubble hasn't been burst and that he will seek clarity.
Well, he's seeking clarity as to whether the bubble is going to burst or not. We have. I heard you refer to Rini Walsh this morning. We have the statement. It says the health service is a priority for the executive. This is from Finance, with this being reflected as one of the nine pillars in the programme for government. The draft, and you'll recognise these words, you know what they're doing. The draft 25-26 budget is currently out for consultation. Once this is complete, the executive will agree the final budget, including the final allocations for each individual department. So in other words, decode that, put it in ordinary speak. No, the money hasn't been agreed. No, it's only out for consultation. And yes, the final allocations have not been determined for each individual department yet. Contrast that to what they write in this document.
Which begs the question, Stephen, what was the choreography yesterday? Before you go out and you tell the people of Northern Ireland what is available for housing, education, and it really at this stage there should be planning around what operations are going to be done. Is it going to be those who have been on the waiting list the longest? We should be at that detail, but we aren't even anywhere near that detail. And was it the fact that the health minister went out again, making his pitch, this is the money that he says that he needs? Or what stage along the way was he informed, or he thought he was informed, that this money was coming? You know, it really is a mess. And there this morning, in front of the great and the good, and also in front of Northern Ireland's new permanent health secretary, this man who's meant to be here to make these controversial decisions, there was this veil of just not knowing and lack of clarity around what money he's going to have in his budget to work with. It was all very embarrassing.
I wonder, is he actually playing a blinder in that he essentially knows, because the document does say with executive support. And I wondered yesterday when I saw this document, does that mean they've got executive support? But clearly it doesn't, because finance have now confirmed that. So I wonder, is Minister Nesbitt playing a blinder by doubling down and putting the money in his pocket as best he can by saying, look, I wonder, is that what he's doing?
Well, possibly. And if so, you know, yes, as you say, he's playing a blinder. These figures aren't new. These figures were talked about last February by Minister Swan, that 135 million was on the wish list. So if you constantly say something, if you say it often enough, you know, do you eventually get it? And yes, possibly Mike Nesbitt, if you say it out loud, if you say it in public, it's going to be very difficult for it not to happen.
Yeah. Show me the money. He literally said that today. Show me the money.
Yes, he did. And there we are. He did say come March, he would start off with a blank sheet of paper in order to start getting ready for this winter's pressures. Again, he will be held to account, he said, by his actions. He wants to be held to account to ensure that by next November, December, January, there will not be corridor care. And he said this morning that patients lose all dignity when they go into hospital. And that was a very hard thing to hear. That's what, when you go into hospital and you're lying on a corridor, that's something, you lose your dignity, you don't know about the standard of care you're going to get. He was going to hear from the Royal College of Emergency Medicine, from the Royal College of Nursing, and Mike Farher, we're going to hear his name a lot. They all want to bend this man's ear to tell him, and this was the message, more money has to go on social care to turn the system around, more money on domiciliary care packages so that people don't end up in hospital, lying on hospital beds and corridors for weeks and months because they can't. There's nowhere for them to go to in the community. Now, that's going to mean a major shift in Northern Ireland's healthcare policy and also where we target funding.
Marie-Louise Connolly, our health correspondent, thank you very much indeed. And as we begin to move on to yet another subject in a moment or two, just before we do so, if we stand back from our programming today and we think what this is all about, we think about the contract, the trust that you have or do not have in government, the aspirations that you have, and the basic expectation that you have, that when they tell you in their programme for government being put together for a year, that they are speaking with one voice, how on earth do they credibly write that down when we have an extraordinary situation where the man in charge of our health in Northern Ireland doesn't know what is going on in terms of whether the money is definitely coming or not, and is having to say out loud that he doesn't know for sure what's going on? Let these words be in your mind today.
I didn't know this was coming, and other ministers have made the point that in terms of a four-party coalition government, it wasn't an equal distribution of knowledge, shall we say.
I dare say the First Minister, the Deputy First Minister and the other ministers who signed this off will be asked questions by my colleagues today and tomorrow with regards to how did he not know and why did you not tell him? Now, next, a former IRA leader who plotted bank robberies and jailbreaks has told the BBC that being condemned to die made him realise what the group's victims had gone through. Brendan Hughes, who's originally from County Tyrone, said he believes the IRA intended to make him one of the disappeared, killing him and burying him in a secret grave. Mr. Hughes described the practice as a war crime that should never have happened.
That is a very sobering thing. Your whole life takes on a whole new meaning. Life becomes precious, and suddenly you realise the position that other people were in, the position that you had been putting people in all these years, that there was a threat over their very existence. Execution on the spot's better than being taken away and tortured and degraded and humiliated and disappeared. I didn't want to be disappeared. I never agreed with that. The disappearing of people is a war crime. Should never have happened, should never have been done. It was an awful thing to do to people, and I never done it nor never agreed with it, but I was going to be subject to it.
The comments come in a wide-ranging interview. The former IRA leader told BBC Spotlight that the Northern Ireland conflict was a total waste of time, of life, and he says he wishes he could take part in a truth and reconciliation process as long as there are no repercussions.
I'm absolutely not glorifying violence. I'm telling my story to tell people who I am, what I am, and where I am today. And where I am today, I would not do any of those things. As far as I'm concerned, my war was futile and it's over. If I could put as much effort into reconciliation and telling the truth, I wish I had a forum to do that, because I'd be the first one up there. And I'm prepared to put it out there. I'm prepared to sit down with anyone, anytime, anywhere, and talk about this in the right forum. If the victims say that's the forum, and there's no repercussions for anyone for doing this, that's where I want to be.
Well, you can watch the second episode on BBC One tonight at 10:40 of this programme. Both episodes on the BBC iPlayer right now. Kieran McGraw's brother was one of the disappeared. Kieran, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Commentator and Belfast Telegraph columnist Malachy O'Doherty is with
morning,
us
morning,
as well.
Kieran.
Good morning, good morning. Well, Kieran, tell me about your brother.
My friend's older brother, 5 years older, and was married. And then, unfortunately, in April 1978, he was, as we know now, disappeared. And took a long time. Eventually, we found him, or he was found in 2014, down in Orrstown in County Meath. So it was a long journey in between. And you know, it was mentioned in the programme last night about coming forward with information. The commission was set up in 1999, and anybody that was providing information to the commission, there's been no comeback to them. You know, so again, we're still looking for five members of the disappeared, and we're always looking for the information, that final bit of information. But take Brenton's case, like, he was one of.
He was just 23 when he was abducted by this so-called army, these so-called soldiers. 23-year-old man abducted.
Yeah, well, he was actually 22 coming 23, yeah. And it took a long time to actually find out what had happened to him, and then a bit longer to find him. But, you know,
what did happen to him?
Well, he was taken down south. Ended up in County Meath, Orrstown, County Meath, in a bog, and had been shot there, and buried. And we didn't get anything until 1999.
And why did they target your brother?
I'm not sure why they did. I mean, the story's put out or whatever, but I mean, there's no reason to disappear anybody. So. In Ireland, I mean, we respect the dead and the importance of, you know, getting somebody home and getting them buried and knowing where they are.
He was expecting the birth of a daughter when...
He was, yeah.
When they killed him.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the same for all the families involved. There's, you know, different things, stages of the family life that was going on. And how the families were affected.
Malachy?
It's an awful thing. The Brendan Hughes in the TV programme
who, not to be confused with Brendan Hughes in Belfast, was in prison at the time that that Brendan McGraw was murdered. And other members of the IRA, including the other Brendan Hughes, the Belfast Brendan Hughes, did point the finger, did condemn the practice of disappearing, and did point the finger at people that he held responsible for that. I mean, it is an absolutely atrocious business. The question of whether we can have some kind of truth process without repercussions, which is what this Brendan Hughes, his actual name is Francis Bernard Hughes, that he wants. Well, there have been various efforts. I mean, going back to the Eames Bradley, the consultation in the past, which fell through the historical inquiries team, which was abolished. There was the Stormont House Agreement. There was the independent effort of the Boston College Group, the Ed Maloney and Anthony McIntyre. And there have been other IRA men like Tommy Gorman and I think Anthony McIntyre himself and others who have said much the same thing, that you know, that the IRA campaign was a waste, you know, that it didn't achieve what it set out to do. One of the interesting lines that Hughes used in that programme is, if we'd put the same effort into a civil rights campaign, we would have got the same, we would have got to where we are now.
Kieran,
but I don't think he was questioned enough. I mean, you called it a long interview. It wasn't. I'm sure you were thinking of questions you would have asked him that weren't asked. I did.
Kieran, the suggestion that if there was a truth and reconciliation process, there would need to be no repercussions. Would that be better for you than not knowing?
I've already got Brenton back, or the family already got Brenton back. I'm sure people would like to know, but
you'd want more detail, presumably, and you know what it must feel like for other people to not know.
Yeah. But for ourselves, we disappeared. If we get the information where the bodies are, that's number one for everybody involved, is getting the body home. Because if you're waking up and your family, you come up in the morning, what will we do next, or how, you know, what journey we're going to try and take to get more information to find them, to find the people that are disappeared. So for the disappeared, we've got to get through. We've got to get the body found.
What about justice?
Justice, again, but I'm talking for myself. I'd rather have Brenton home and know where he's buried. I can get the other information later, but number one is that he's home. We know where he is. We can go to his grave. He's not in a bog somewhere.
What about justice? That's one of the big questions, Malky.
It is, and there's division of opinion on it. There's certainly people who are very, very strongly, emphatically concerned that there should be justice. When with the British government brought in the legacy legislation last year, I mean, all political parties in Northern Ireland, including Sinn Féin, which normally speaks for the IRA or defends the IRA, was emphatic that was the wrong thing, that there shouldn't be an amnesty, that people should face judgment, the judgment of the courts for what they'd done in the past. I mean, I think we can question the sincerity of some of the people who said that, but that is an idea so strong in the hearts of a lot of people in Northern Ireland that it can't be lightly put aside.
Malky, thank you very much. Kieran, thank you for joining us this morning. As I say, you can watch both episodes of those Spotlight programmes on the BBC iPlayer right now. Episode 2 on BBC One Northern Ireland tonight at 10:40. Thank you for your company today. That was a big show. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.